Welcome to the Appen Podcast, a podcast for people working in the real world of IT. If you're a sysadmin, working on the help desk, a network engineer, an IT consultant, a computer tech, you want to know more about servers, or even if you want to get a job in the IT field, this podcast is for you. Hi, I'm Al.
And I'm Andy, and this is episode 21. 2-1. There's two of us here, and there's one of us who isn't, because Jerry can't make it today. So you just got me and Al for your company. So what have you been up to this week?
Yeah, been looking actually at the best practices for Active Directory administration. I want to go in a little bit of not too much depth here, but I want to make another a complete episode of it, really. It's just about, like, you know, if everyone, if you've got four or five domain admins or administrators in your company and they all use the same password and the same username and password, so you're just using the default domain administrator account, the called administrator, and those all got with the same password, there's kind of no auditing with that. So someone could make a change and you don't know who it is, because obviously everyone's using the same logon, the logon name to log on to the system to change things. So it's all very interesting, it's saying that you should all have named accounts so that you can change, in the logs you can see who logged on with that user account. And if you have actually got AD auditing in the higher privileged groups, so that administrator account, that default administrator account, what you get is what members of this group is domain admin, enterprise admin, and the building admin group in that group, and there's a need to be. So you only need to be added to that group, but then you're thinking, well, how do you put yourself into that group if you're not a domain admin? But what allowed to give people the delegation rights to add people into that group, adding in people to those groups. So you delegate those, you can then give the permission to add those people who need to into those high privileged groups. You would then upgrade, you would basically for that time into that group, and then once that task is done, you would then take them out. But I'll go on to that. I heard you on the, you've been on another show there, Andy.
I was on the Podnuts phone-in show. As it stands now, that episode has just come out. I'll have to look up what episode number it was. But it's the Sunday night phone-in show that they have on Podnuts. So there was me and Jeff and Chris and can't remember the other guy. Sorry about that.
I think it was Alex or something, I think.
Alex, that's it, yes, yeah. They're all great guys, all very, very knowledgeable people. And we had a good show. We're talking about all sorts of stuff, so...
Episode 126.
126, okay. It was a good one. Yep. Yeah, I mean, we've been on a few Podnut shows, haven't you? You've been on a few. And we were both on the Geeksters one time. So there's plenty of podcasts on that network for everyone to listen to.
So what have you been up to work-wise? Anything interesting?
Well, this week, me and you have been going over a few little things, haven't we? Because one of my clients, it's basically got a small network in their office, and it is a complete and utter mess. Over time, I've really only known them for the past year and a half, and they've periodically, as problems have come up, have asked me to do some work for them, add this. We've added a VPN connection between the two sites, done a few cleanups and things and set up printers and that for them, but the whole network as a whole has just been over time, say over the last 10 years, has just been this, bits added on to bits, added on to bits. So it's become quite a mess. And as a result, they're really noticing the performance problems now, especially over the network, because you saw the diagram, I sent you a diagram, didn't I? We could perhaps put a little mock-up of that diagram on the show notes if you wanted to. It's not specific to that company, it's just the way that they were before, the way that they still are, to be honest. I mean, they basically have shared drives in a Windows machine, which is shared over the network, which five other people connect to at all times. And that one particular machine is just, I don't know what the word they can use is, but a bottleneck, really? I suppose, is the word, where, you know, it's not like, you know, how many people could access one server at one time and not be affected by it. But when you're doing it through a Windows, standard Windows box, all doing the same file share, it's just, it is a bottleneck. And they really have slow network performance, slow accessing, slow transfers. They have recently, they did this themselves, and this is an example of just adding on to an existing system. They've recently got a USB hard drive, plugged it into one of the other computers, and they're now backing up over the network. So they're going from a USB drive on one machine. Let me get this straight. I may have this wrong. They're going from a USB drive on one machine via a 100 meg network connection to another Windows box to another USB port, which is USB 2, by the way, as well, into another USB drive. And the guy that's set it up, he knows a little bit about computers. And in all honesty, they needed to get a backup. Now, I know that the method that they've used is a bit crap, but they needed to use it. They needed to get a backup because they had nothing. So that's one credit to them, is they've done something. But that one backup took 19 hours to back up. So using that method, because it was one drive copied to another drive via a network over a USB, it was a mess. So they've now realised, especially when they were doing that backup, they were all working at the same time. So they were trying to back up, access the files, all simultaneously. And it's just not quick enough. And the PCs aren't quick enough, you know. And that the PC, which has got all the shared files on, is being used constantly. It's not like it's you know, a machine stuck under a desk, which is not in use. Somebody's using that all day. And most of the stuff they do, all the orders they get through and the email access is all over, I can't remember the company they use, but so that's all, well, it's basically an exchange, hosted exchange. So the quickest bit they have in the whole system is they have a fiber connection, they have a really good download speed, but most of the time they can't even get a good download because the computers are so busy doing other stuff, it just clogs them all up. So I come up with a different way of connecting them up using you know, a gigabit switch and some gigabit Ethernet cards. So straight away that's going to increase the speed and the bandwidth on the local network, and also instead of having shared drives within one of the towers, then well, you suggested the what was the little server that you suggested,
the microserver, was it the Synology box? Yeah,
the Synology one. Yeah, well, there's a couple of different options for them, isn't there, and quite a bit of a price range for all of them. I haven't been down to actually see them yet and talk about all this. I'll probably be doing that this week, but you know, one of those will be just right. And then my idea is to have a raided one, so there's a backup in itself, and then have a USB drive to back that up, completely separate from the network, so it goes straight from the NAS to its own USB backup drive.
And I think with a Synology box as well, you can do them so you can back up to the cloud as well. So
yeah. Yeah, that's the other option they've got. So I'm seeing that three different methods of backup.
Yeah.
The RAID, so if a hard drive goes down, you can rebuild that through the RAID.
Yeah.
You've got the local USB, which isn't going to be backing up over the network. And I'm not sure if those Synologies are USB 3. which would just make it quicker, I suppose.
Yeah.
Because they've got a backup terabyte hard drive,
yeah,
which is USB 3. So that's the idea that we've got at one of the offices that they have. And I was speaking to them, the boss at the other office that they have, and he saw what the plans were, and he said, you know what, our office is just as bad as their office. So pretty soon, if you get their office done, because theirs was more important, then we'll be doing the other office as well.
If you get two Synology boxes, you can actually sync them up between the two.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So you can then replicate data between the two. I think one of my friends does that. They both got one at each of their house, and they've got a VPN connected between the two, and then they can sync them up between the two. So another way of backing up.
That's brilliant, yeah. Yeah, that's another thing I'll offer to them. Because at that second place, they don't actually... The database that they have is the most important thing.
Yeah.
It's an ACK database.
Yeah.
That's at the main office. So I don't think they would immediately think they want another Synology drive in that second office. But saying that, they still need some sort of... They've got no backup at that office either.
Yeah.
So even if it's a local backup. But yeah, I mean, that's one of the things I'm sort of excited, I suppose is the right word, to kind of get stuck into. This will all have to be done on a weekend as well, because there's no way I can go in and do all of this stuff during a normal working day.
Yeah.
It's tough enough to go into that place and get on a computer for 5 minutes, because they're not hovering over you saying, how long are you going to be, but you can tell.
Yeah.
They need to get back on the computer, like, now, and you're trying to do something else, and it's difficult.
Yeah.
So that's going to be a weekend job. But they're kind of like ones that I like, because it's a project. It's not just a repair and fix. It's a project that you've got to think about. And so I kind of give them a quote, and it's even things like cables. The cables that've got work, but some of the cables are 10 meters long. And the computers are about 2 foot from each other.
Yeah.
I know it. I don't know what difference that would make, really, to be honest. Apart from neatness behind the desk, because it's an absolute mess. So that's one little project that's still going on.
Just going back, there's two things I was going to let you know. I found an interesting page, website the other day. I might share it on Google Plus or something. But it's how to document your network. It's a really good little page. It's got four pages to it. It's basically like what you should basically be backing, what you should be documenting, and how to describe how you like if you just draw it on a bit of paper, and then how it turns it onto things. So I'll put that into the show notes for you, and you can have a look at that. And then the other thing that came out this week is, no one might have heard me talk about a product called Veeam, which is a backup at Veeam, which is basically a product I use, which is basically we use to backup all our virtual servers. They've actually released a product which is actually free, which is called the Veeam Endpoint Backup. It's been in beta for a bit. I haven't actually played with it, but it's maybe quite good. They actually released it, a product this week. They have basically, what it is, you install it on your on. It's basically so it's for it's basically for your physical machine, because they don't actually provide backup for physical machines, because they want to do virtual. But this one for hair is for doing backing up like your laptops or your PC. And basically what does a full backup of your machine to either USB hard drive, a network share, or if you're running Veeam you can do it to its repository. And if you want to restore something, you can restore a single file or you can restore the whole machine. So if you lose a machine or a hard drive, you can restore it using a, you get a boot CD with it, or you download an ISO and put it onto a USB stick or whatever, and it will basically restore, you can restore your machine. I haven't actually played it, so I thought you might want to have a look at that. Maybe that can be for use, might be useful for some of your customers if you can sell them a hard drive and put them free, if you see what I mean. So
that's called Veeam. Yeah, I mean, you could put a link to that for everyone else to check out as well, and I'll definitely have a look at that. Anything like that, you know, is interesting to do. Maybe play maybe have with a bit, it to begin with.
Yeah, maybe have a bit of a play with it and then see what happens. And
I'll do it on some of my machines.
Yes.
So yeah, that sounds good.
That are the two things I thought you could maybe it might be helpful for your customer anyway, for some of your customer base. So yeah, anything else you've been doing, Jerry?
Jerry's not here.
Andy, even, sorry.
Well, there's been a lot of regular stuff over the past week. I can't remember if I've mentioned this on this show or the other show, but one of my clients has moved house recently, and she moved from one big mansion into another big mansion, and this new place is it's amazing, really. But one thing she's neglected to do is she basically phoned me up and said, can you come and collect my computer on I think it was a Tuesday, and to come to the next house, the new house, on the Wednesday and plug it all back in again. I said, yeah, no problem, I can do that. So I turned up and unplugged everything and got everything out. And then she said, how will it work with the internet when I get to the new place? I said, well, have you sorted out your broadband provider yet? And she looked at me completely blank. Why, what do I have to do? So she moved into this new house and has no internet. I got a text message the other day. It was supposed to come on Thursday, didn't arrive. Then she got a message on Friday to say they'll be there on Monday. So at some point tomorrow, it will be getting done.
Hopefully.
So now she's asked me to come on Tuesday. Now, I have been back to plug the computer in and get everything set up. But it's more like an office set up, this place, than a house, because it's brilliant. Up in the loft, I suppose it is, up in the attic, there's a converted attic, and it's got a bedroom in it. But when you open these two doors, which kind of like lead into the edge of the sloping of the roof, you know, you're at the side of the house then with the sloping roof, there's a big piece of wood laid out.
Yeah,
they've got a DVR with a CCTV all plugged in. There's cables. There's a patch panel up there. It's like this was the computer network central little hub, if you like. But there's loads of stuff missing. So this guy that lived there before, as well as being extremely well off, was also a bit of a tech nut as well.
Yeah.
Because he's got CCTV, remote access to his cameras. Every house, every room in the house has got at least two Ethernet ports in it. So all of these things need to be put back on, but there's loads of stuff. You can tell there's bits missing from up in that little attic room. Mm-hmm. And at the minute, because I haven't been back, I don't know what's missing, but I'm suspecting that there's switches that's supposed to be in there, that there's no router. I'm hoping that BT have sent one out to them after they've set up the new broadband connection. I assume they've got a new BT router to go there. So there's definitely bits missing. There's probably cabling missing. So once this internet gets switched on, I don't even know. See, this is the problem. I don't even know where the phone points into the house is. I don't even know where the router goes. This place is so big. I haven't found it yet. We're hoping that BT can find it for us. And then in another little room downstairs, there's another patch panel. I'll have to take some photos of this next time I'm here and show you.
Yeah, it'd be good.
There's another patch panel, because another thing that they have in the house is every room has a bracket on the wall where a flat screen TV can go onto it. And every room has an aerial socket for the TV to be plugged in. And every room has a speaker in the ceiling, which leads back to an amp, whereby apparently you can play music, you know, through one of these home audio systems, which you know, you could put one CD on in one room, another CD on in another room, play the radio in a third room, and you can specify what's what, and it all runs from an app apparently.
That's good.
So she'll have like her iPad, for example, and just say, right, I want to play this album in this room, or all over the house, or wherever you want. So that needs setting up. So all of a sudden I've gone from a client who all I ever gave her help with was obviously her computer problems. She always had printer problems, and a few bits of Word stuff that she had issues with. It's gone from that to this big network that needs setting up. CCTV cameras, remote access, putting tellies on the wall, getting the audio set up. So, which is good, you know. A lot more things need to be set up. And no doubt a lot more things will go wrong. But that's another thing that, that's been going on. So we'll hopefully be able to keep you updated with what's happening with that over the next several shows.
Cool.
Once we get... Oh, and I also had a client. Well, the best description I can give them is a crazy person.
Right.
Phoned me up this week. I've no idea who they were. I've never heard from them before. They're certainly not one of my clients at all. And this guy came on. He was extremely abrupt straight away. He basically said, without introducing himself or anything, he said, right, I've got this computer, it's full of viruses, and I need you to get rid of all the viruses, but I don't want you to do this, and oh, by the way, if you don't do it, then you don't get paid, do you, because you haven't fixed it. That's what they all do. Every company says no fix, no fee, so if you don't do it, you don't get paid, do you? And I'm thinking, right, okay. And immediately, as I heard, it was more of his tone of voice, if anything, but immediately I thought, I do not want to do any work for this person. I could tell, you can tell right from the beginning, he didn't want to pay, basically. He lived a bit too far away for even for me to be you know, worth my effort. And then he started saying, I bet it's going to be a few hours, isn't it? I bet it's going to be a few hours. And I said, well, you know, virus removals can be quite quick and they can take several hours. No, he said, don't mean that. I said, when can you get here? Right? And I thought, yeah, quite recently I've been going through this process. I've been trying to weed out bad customers that I have. You know, bad customers who, A, don't pay very well, don't pay on time, give me lots of hassle. I've been trying to wean them out in the nicest possible way, and I thought, I don't want to work for this guy whatsoever. Too much trouble, even on a 30-second phone call.
Yeah.
And when he said, no, how long are you going to be before you get here, I thought, okay, he wants somebody right now. You know, and I thought, he's not going to get anybody right now. So I just said, I think this was Wednesday he phoned me up. I said Friday afternoon is the first time I could get there, right? And he said, oh, forget it, and put the phone down.
Nice.
So he was the most unpleasant person that I ever had phone me up. It was so abrupt and demanding, and you know, and as soon as he said, "If you don't fix it, then I don't pay you," you know, straight away, you know, even if I went there to do it, he's gonna keep saying, "Oh, that's not right. It's still not working right," you know. So,
no,
that was quite abrupt. So he's, he's marked in my phone. I have a little tip for people as well. I do this with two things. So in your phone, when you get cold callers or you have these bad customers, just save them as a contact. I have a contact which I just call junk, which is basically cold callers, people selling you PPI, people selling you, like businesses like me, like with articles in local magazines and stuff which I don't want. So I just save them as junk.
Yeah.
So if they ever phone back again and this unknown number comes up on the screen, it says contact name junk. So I just don't answer it. So he's gone into that contact list.
So definitely sounds like, yeah, you don't want to deal with him, isn't it?
Don't want to deal with him. No, don't want to deal with him. And that's what we want.
He didn't say where he got your number from or anything like that or anything, or...
No, he didn't, no. I assume he was looking on the internet and just... He was, by his attitude, he'd probably phoned round several people.
Yeah.
At the top of the list. And, of course, generally, all the good ones at the top of the list are either, you know, too expensive for him. Yeah. Or are busy because they've got lots of stuff on. They can't just drop everything just for him. So, and by the time he got to me, it'd probably been put off by so many people or said, you know, yeah, that'll be, something that's too expensive for him. So he didn't like that. Or other people have said sometime next week and he didn't like that. So he basically wanted a service within an hour and not pay for it.
Yeah.
Is what he was after. So, I mean, that's fine. He can carry on phoning other people up.
Wasting their time.
You can, I don't mind competitors having him, you know. That's the idea. Get rid of your bad customers and give them to your competitors. So.
Yeah, so, I've got to say, I had an interesting thing this week. That a couple of our documents at work are locked down, so you can't change any of the styles. So you can't do things like you want to underline something or put dots in it, or not dots, but like, you know, points in it, a list of points. And it's really annoying me. I know that when we're doing our proposal and stuff, you're not meant to do the document, but this isn't a proposal, this is like an internal document. And it's really annoying me that I couldn't work out that they obviously locked the style down, and you can basically unlock the styles, but you had to have a password, but no one seemed to know what the password was. So
the style was locked, so it wasn't a read-only file.
No,
you could change the text.
Yeah, you can do whatever text you want, but you can't. You've got to use a certain site. You've got to use a certain styles for the company to make the ISO standard. And this document was for an internal document; it wasn't going out anywhere, You just couldn't change the style. It was really annoying me because I was trying to do some graphics and stuff, but wouldn't they do it? So you can remove the style, but you have to have a password. But I didn't know what the password was. But I found a little article on Google that tells you. I didn't know this, but if you go to rename an extension on the file, so like this says document test.doc.x, if you rename it and put .zip on the end of it, you can go into that, it turns it into a zip file, and inside that zip file is all the document stuff inside it. So, like themes and the font tables and the settings and the styles. And all you have to go in there is you just go in there and delete the settings.xml file. And then you just tell it not to be a .zip file anymore. and it goes back to the normal document file, then you can open up the Word and it's back. You can, the styles are all the same, but you can add your own styles and stuff. So I didn't know you could do that.
That's a good method there. I like that.
But it's been bugging me ages, this template, why I can't change anything, and then I worked it out this week. It's just, yeah, I'll put that in the show notes.
So that's basically getting around the password, isn't it?
Yeah, basically.
It makes a mockery of the password in a way.
Yes.
But I tell clients about Windows passwords, you know, especially a Windows login password for a home machine.
Yeah.
It's basically useless, isn't it?
Yes.
It's only useful if they've got kids or whatever, or visitors, and they don't want them getting on the computer, they don't know the password, they can't get on. But in terms of, you know, if somebody wanted and knew how to get at the documents, you know, a lot of my customers think, oh, it's got a password on, so if the computer got stolen, all their stuff safe, you know. So that's in Word.
Yes,
that's in Word.
Because
right?
You can basically have the styles, and you can set the styles so that people can't change the styles. So you can say, like, this is what the style of the company, the styles in the Word for the company are, and then.
Yeah, I can see why they do it. You know, it's a standard, isn't it? For the
yeah, we have to do it for all our ISO and stuff. So all the documents have got to be the same. So
just have to be clear for people who don't know. There's an ISO, it's not the same as an ISO file.
No,
it's a standard of practice of work in, I don't know if it's worldwide an ISO.
I don't know if they have them in America. I don't know if they do. Well, yeah, so like you have different standards, and it basically means that your company follows rules and processes to do things. And then once
could be anything, couldn't it? Yeah. Could be an ISO for anything. Yeah.
And then once a year they have an audit come round, and everyone's meant to know what the processes are. So you quickly have to read the handbook to make sure that you're doing it right. Make sure your docs are in.
That's it. Say you're a manufacturer of something, then they have to. Or health and safety is another one, isn't it, for yep. ISOs? You have to have a method of practice for wearing the correct protective clothing and.
Yeah.
Permits and stuff, you know. That's just to be clear to people who may think the ISO is an ISO.
Yeah.
It's a different type of ISO.
So
that's interesting, yeah.
Yeah, the other thing I was talking about, so you talk about AD audit, you were talking about auditing the other week about how you track things being open and closed or.
Oh, that's right, yeah, that's to do with this network I was talking about before.
Yeah.
And that's one thing that they were interested in doing. And I don't know if these Synologies, you have to go into that as well, can do this, or whether you need an actual AD server. But yeah, they have a lot of documents, they have a lot of databases, and the boss of the company basically wanted to know if they could ever find at any point in time where they could see who did what at what time, who opened the file, who saved the file, so therefore find out who entered some information, not necessarily for catching them out or doing any bad stuff, but just to know who did what, you know, so they could say, ah, Jimmy edited this file and put this extra line in or whatever.
Yeah.
So is this what you're talking about then?
Yes. So okay. What I was talking about is I was talking about the best practice area for AD administration. And part of that is like looking at making if something does go wrong, how you can track it down. So there's two kind of audit levels I'm going to go through. The first is the auditing of Active Directory. So if someone resets a password for a user, if someone adds someone to a group, if someone deletes a user account, then we know who it is. And what you need to do first is you need to actually enable auditing first through group policy. So what I saw about group policy before, there's a group policy called the default domain controller policy, and these basically gets applied only to domain controllers, and because obviously where everything, all this thing happens is on the domain controller, when people log stuff or delete stuff, add people to group apps, it all happens on the domain controller. So what you need to do is he's going to basically Greek policy managers and you edit default domain controller policy, and then under computer configuration, policies, Windows setup, security settings, audit policies, and then there's in there is an option on the right hand side called audit directory service access, and you tick a box and then you say success and failure, so you tick those two boxes, and then you do a GP update on both your on whatever how many domain calls you've got, so that basically says that you want to do AD auditing, and then you have to set up ACLs to say actually where do you want to where do you want what do you want to monitor or what objects you want to monitor. So you basically select the OU where you want to monitoring, or you can actually do it at the top of the root of the domain. But first of all, you need to make sure that you enable the advanced tab in Active Directory in users and computers. I can't remember what the top there's one of the things at the options, you go at the top and you can say show advanced features, and then you can right click whatever OU you want to, and then you can go to properties, and then you can there's a security tab now enabled because you set show advanced options, and then you go to click on the security tab, then click on advanced again, and then there's an auditing tab, and then you can click add, and then you can add, you have to add an object. So we basically want to say authenticated user, that means anyone who touches the system gets audited, and then you click apply, and then you can say you want to say basically under the access you want to say write all properties, and that will basically you can that will log everything what happens in AD. But you could do things like only when you want to add someone to a group or if a user's deleted. So you can kind of select what you want it to happen, what things you want. So maybe you only want to know when something gets deleted, just in case someone deletes account. But if you do write all properties, it basically ticks the box, and it basically you can then it will record all the it will record anything. So I tested this by deleting a user account, and it basically logs it as an event. So you have to go into Event Viewer, and one of the Event Viewers is the Security folder. And under there, you can go into Security, and there'll be a load of events, what's happened. But annoyingly, I couldn't find a free tool which basically monitors those security. So you could set it up, so you could each event has a different event ID. So if you want to know if someone deletes their account, you can set up an email alert for that, which says whenever you get this certain event ID, you can it will then delete it. Sorry, not when delete it, it will send you an email. But what would be nice if there's a bit of software which kind of like, because what you want to go back if something gets deleted, like you don't find out for 2 weeks later, you don't have to go searching through the event logs. And also, again, if you haven't, gone in there and told it not to delete them, you know, like in Event Viewer, if it gets filled up it starts deleting itself, so you need to make sure that's expanded or just give it really big lots of space so you just keep it going. But I couldn't find a bit of software which that basically puts it into a nice format, so it's like you do your nice report at the end of the month for saying these 5 accounts deleted, because for like certain things it might give you 6 different, for one event it might give you 6 event viewers, if you see what I mean, Andy. So there's loads of software out there which you can pay for, like for Man Denny, there's one called AD Audit Plus, and that basically puts, as soon as it gets written in the event viewer, it also gets written to the SQL database, so that even if someone was clever and then deleted the event in the event viewer, saying aha, but deleted the account, I'm going to delete the audit log as well, it also gets put into SQL database as well. So there's lots of tools. If anyone else knows that there's actually a free tool out there, that would be, I just wanted something simple and easy. I didn't want to have to pay for it really, but yeah, so that's kind of auditing the AD side of things. But also you can do what you wanted to do, Andy, is you wanted to audit file access. For that to work, you need to make sure that everyone's, all the PCs are on the domain. And what you do is you set the auditing again, but you'd create another group policy, but you'd only apply it to the file servers where you want it to happen, where you want the logging to reside. And again, you'd then go into group policy and go to that same place as a minute ago. And there's a thing called audit object access. Tick that, and then again on that server, wherever the folder you want to be, you want to access what you want to basically audit. You go into right click the folder, go to properties, go to advanced, and there'll be an audit tab, and in there you can click what you can say audit everything. But if you do that, your event view will get filled up really quickly because it audits everything. So someone opening something, even if someone browses to that, it will log that user's browse to that folder. So that was one.
I remember you'll have to refresh my mind on this. On Exchange 03, where you could, or somebody could view, I think you had to set up a user where someone could view every email to everybody.
Yes.
And I remember that took up, I don't know if that was some kind of auditing thing or a monitoring thing. I looked it up quite a few years ago now for somebody who wanted to basically monitor all the emails in and out from anybody within their organization. They actually wanted it to catch somebody doing something.
Yeah. It's called journaling in Exchange.
Journaling, that's it. Yeah. So would that be a similar thing to that, you know, if you monitor with the task manager thing? So it takes up an awful lot of processing power
basically, memory
as well.
So when that happens, when an email comes into an email into a user's mailbox, it gets copied into, you basically set up an auditing, a journal mailbox. And when someone sends an email to a mailbox and you've got that journal set up, it will copy it into that journaling mailbox. And if someone sends something from that mailbox, you also get a copy in that. So if someone wanted, like they were sending files home, they think, I'll send them a file home and I'll delete it, you'll get a copy of that. But what you've got to remember is that you're going to have double amount of space because you've physically got all that information twice. So
I remember setting it up and running it. I think we run it for a week, and then she told me to switch it off because I told her, if you want to monitor this, then monitor it, but we'll have to, when you're finished, we've got to switch it off because it could slow things down. It could do, you know, as we just said. And I actually felt quite guilty afterwards because I didn't know at the time. And of course, I'm just doing what the customer asked me to. But somebody got dismissed from their company. They got sacked because I set up this journaling. The boss monitored it. And a week later, she said to me, oh, you can turn that off now. We don't need to access it anymore. And that's when I found out a few days later that someone had got the sack. And I thought, I've just got somebody to sack there. But I thought, Natalie, they've got themselves to sack. You know.
You weren't doing anything wrong.
And this is a thing, I'm sure you come across it. If the customer asks you to do something, if, you know, you don't know what they want it for. She never told me what it was for. I mean, I would have had to have done it anyway. But you do it, don't you?
Yeah.
If they say switch on journaling because they want to monitor all the emails coming in and out, then you do it. Actually, a quick question going on to that journaling in Outlook. In fact, I've got two questions actually after that. First of all, the Synology NAS that you were mentioning before.
Yeah.
Does that do that? Does that have Active Directory and can it be monitored? And secondly, you know, with Exchange, their Exchange we're just talking about was local on the local 2003 server.
Yeah.
But now, of course, you have exchange, which is hosted somewhere else,
yeah,
can you still do the same journaling on the hosted exchange?
Okay, regarding the first one about if the Synology can do that with the auditing, I don't know if it can. Because I don't, you'd have to have some way, because obviously with the AD auditing and the auditing of files, obviously all the machines have got one common, you know, they've got one central place where all the username and passwords are stored, aren't they?
Yeah.
Problem with the Synology is it's not going to know about them, isn't it? It's going to, I'm guessing that you could set up users on the Synology, mm-hmm. and you could make sure that everyone logs on with their own username and password, so they've got local username and password.
Okay. I run a little Buffalo server. I suppose it's similar to that Synology at home, yep. yourself. And although I've just got that on as a shared network drive that anybody can access,
yep.
it does have the option to set up users. You know, so we could give everyone their own name, username and password. So whenever they have to access that drive, they log in, and then can that be audited or be found out within the NAS?
I wonder.
I'm guessing it would, shouldn't it?
Well, it depends. It's got to be a function of the NAS, isn't it? Really. So
I'd have thought you'd have gone to like simply right clicked on properties, and of the file. And it says, and it will say like modified on a particular date.
Yeah.
And then if it would have a user modified by.
Yeah, that would. I mean, it'd be simply like that. You could do it simply like that.
Yeah. Okay.
But it wouldn't give you like the full what you'd get like on the Windows box. You definitely kind of think who modified it last or whatever, or who created it. So you kind of.
Well, these are the kind of options that I've got to give him, you know, and these are the pros and cons. If you get this, this is the kind of. You know, information you can find out, and if you spend a lot more money, you can find out a lot more information. Where do you want to, you know, where do you stand on that?
Yeah,
you know, that's up to the owner to. I give him all the information. It's up to him to whether, you know, which way he wants to go. But yeah, I see what you mean about users and all that. That's that one. Yeah.
Yeah. If Jerry would be able to ask us, because I'm guessing like all the Synology bots are running some kind of Linux on them, so I'm guessing they're going to be running Samba. So I don't know if you can do
a Samba shirt, yeah.
If you could, maybe have a. I was just having a look. Apparently, it looks like you can do it on the new Synology auditing. There's a thing you can go to. You can do enable transfer log in the file service control panel for the Windows file service. And it says, it basically gives you a list of. I'll put a link in the show notes. There's Reddit particles. It looks like it shows you, this person on this date, this IP address.
Well, excellent.
User created this file, this person read it, created it, read it, deleted it, created it. So it could. I've got a friend who's actually got a Synology box, and I'll ask him tomorrow if you can do that or not. So I think the Synology box is definitely the way to go. It's a bit more expensive than the rest, but it is more of a, it has got more of a server OS kind of thing on it, so you can do the things like syncing it off site, etc. So,
do all the workstations have to have Windows Pro on them?
No, because it's not. The only thing you need a Pro for is having a domain.
Okay, yeah, of course, yeah. Okay, well that's well, we'll have a look at that and ask your mate and see if he's. I mean, he may have an older one which doesn't do it, possibly, but.
But the good thing is if you've got one of these servers, the Synology, you can update them for free. It's really good. So you download a new bit of software for them and you just update it. It's not like you don't have to pay for it kind of thing. So
excellent, yeah. Okay. So that covers that one. And then what about the other one about with hosted exchange and doing that journaling system on that? Is that just access control or username control or admin?
I'm just having a look now. I don't know if you can. I'm just having a quick Google. I haven't come across it in Office 365. Apparently you can enable it, but someone's moaning that it's not that good. It's a joke. So,
God. I thought it was, because with Office 365, wouldn't there be the one main head honcho user who can do everything?
Yeah, there must be.
And then you have email users who can just receive email. And you'd have thought from your main control panel, you can access everybody's mailbox.
Yeah.
Maybe individually, though.
Maybe you have to pay for it.
The admin can access an individual's one at a time.
Yeah.
But not all together in one box.
Yeah. Because obviously it generally takes up quite a lot of space, so you might have disabled that feature. But let me I'll have a bit of a Google around that, and then we can come back at a later date to have a look at that. So, yeah.
Or if any of the listeners know of experience, any ideas, they can let us know.
That's good. We had an email in, haven't we, Andy?
Oh, yeah, we did, yeah. I was reading that just the other day. This is about... I'm just looking through our notes here. Oh, here we go. This is about the Pixie Boot that we're talking about, isn't it?
Yeah.
So this is interesting stuff. So I'll read that out for you now. This is from Brad Torrey. Hasn't he been on some of the Podnut shows?
Yeah.
I think I remember that name. Yeah, yeah.
Well, that's what I think I heard it from about the other day when I was listening. I think I was heard about the TFT, or not the the TFTP kind of thing. So,
yeah. Okay, so here we go. It says, hi guys, still enjoying the podcast and great. Thanks for the great content. I've been supporting small businesses for about 4 years, and I like hearing your group discussions of some more advanced / enterprise perspective. I have a little feedback on setting up a Pixie environment, on a simple Pixie environment, which is good. This setup is more for quick access or testing and learning, but it works. I found this process to be very beneficial to myself, for myself to better understanding the basics of Pixie. So this would be good for people to learn stuff from, so that's great. I followed this guide at this link, and we'll have to put this link in the notes, but it's diddy.boot-land.net. Basically, you need a TFTP D32, which is a Windows application that enables DHCP and other features from a standalone executable, and you'll need Pixie Linux, which is a Linux-based Pixie solution that you can extract the components from the installer package, and to my surprise, works in this Windows setup. He says, I created a WinXP VM, use an XP mode on a Windows 7, but you can use an XP VM if you like. I found that Win 7 doesn't work for this setup for some reason. Forums also showed this to be a problem for many. I'm sure that with some effort, this could be resolved, but for this little lab, I didn't find it worth the time. So he's basically using just the XP mode or an XP image. This guide will get you up and running with a DHCP server that has an option available to point the Pixie server. Note, TFTP is a component of DHCP that is missing from most routers and is required for Pixie. And then the next bit now is the actual guide, isn't it? So I'll go through that. Right, the following guide, you can set up a splash page, load images, and then you can boot from. Okay, I set up different DHCP ranges for my router versus the TFTP 32 a DHCP server, so there aren't many conflicts. When I want a Pixie boot, I disable DHCP in the router temporarily, launch TFTP D32 D32, and then boot the machine up that I want to access Pixie. At this point, I have SpinWrite loaded as an option, and I will be looking further to develop a solution to get Acronis and some other tools available. One of my goals is to be able to restore the system image of a client machine using this Pixie solution. One of my optional configurations in this setup is allow you to customize the splash screen for the MAC address of the booting machine. So you could create a system image for specific machines. And then, when the machine loads from the Pixie server, it will be able to load up its particular image without much interacting from the user. Thanks again for a great show. And that's from Brad Torrey. He's from TCCP Computer Services. And he's given a little diagram as well, hasn't he, about Pixie as well, so we can put that in there. But that is really good information as well. I was wondering as well how you booted from it and having different DHCP servers. So he explained there how he temporarily disables the DHCP in the router and then boots directly to it. But that sounds really good. You know, that was some of the things we were looking at, wasn't it? Really interesting that.
Yeah, just word of caution with that. I use that TFTP program quite a lot of the time because if you want to do things like upgrade the firmware on routers or things like that, or you do when you back up a config, you have to be back up to TFTP server. That's a good little tool what you can run on your machine. But the problem you've got to remember is if you start that TFTP software on your machine, by default, when it loads up, it starts a little DHCP server for obviously what this purpose is. But obviously when you're doing on the network, you just want to use TFTP. It obviously you don't want to have, you normally got DHCP running, so obviously you can get conflicts on that. So I also have to quickly load it up, turn off DHCP, stop the program, and then it remembers every time you load it up. Because the first time you start that program up on the PC, it DHCP servers started by default. But when I want to use it, normally I just use a TFTP server, TFTPD server, just so that to like filing transfer. But no, it's a good email. I need to have a look at that link and have a look at setting up kind of thing. So
yeah, so it sounds good for practicing and learning, understanding, but it's not a solution for a permanent solution, is it, for on site somewhere? But it's definitely a good way to learn. So you can run it off it. I would probably do that, running off an image and then try and get another image to load from it. But yeah, that sounds really good.
Yep. So if you want to email us again, or if you want to email us with an email, it's just admin@adminpodcast.co.uk. I think we're just about there, I think, for tonight. Going for an hour. So
yeah, we're going, been going for about an hour. So decent length show there.
Yeah. I had the message from Andy. No, that's wrong. Jerry Boyd going through that he doesn't feel very well. That's why he didn't turn up tonight.
Oh, dear, okay.
So hopefully he'll be on here next time. So so we'll speak to you all soon if Andy hasn't got anything else to say.
No, that's it. Yep. We'll see you all next time.
Right. We'll see you soon. Bye for now.